Hello?
Hello.
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 Hi.
And welcome.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Please introduce the show.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to F This Movie, a new podcast about movies and effing.
And effing. And movies.
My name is Patrick.
And I'm Doug.
And I'm Patrick. And this is F This Movie.
And today we'll talk about a movie in which we either F it or F it. Wait, yeah, is that the concept? I have no idea what this podcast is about.
I don't either.
This is your idea. I was invited over.
I pressed record a little hastily.
I was offered a caffeine-free Diet Dr. Pepper, and you told me to sit right here and talk into this thing. And I'm doing that. So now I'm here, and we're talking about movies.
Yes, we're talking about one specific movie. F This Movie. We will talk about one specific movie.
But really, what is, I mean, can you explain after this movie? I know there's no parameters, there's no guidelines, but can you please explain what
I like to think outside the bun.
What the overall concept is with F This Movie.
Look, F This Movie, you know how sometimes you see a movie?
Yes, I see them all the time.
Yeah.
I used to see more in my earlier days. Now I'm just relegated to like twice a year because I'm so busy with the kids.
You're like a Christmas and Easter Catholic.
Absolutely. I'm a creaster. I'm a CEO, but for movies.
I only see the new Harry Potter movie,
the Marmaduke movie. God, that looks awful. That is an F that movie. I think that could be it. Okay, so the parameters, I know there's like, there's no...
So sometimes you see a movie, and then if you don't like it, you're like, oh man, F this movie.
Yes.
But then if you do like it,
yes.
What do you like?
I'm like, F this movie!
Yeah.
So, oh, I see.
And if you really like it, you're like, I like this movie so much, I want to F it.
So I see, it's all about... This podcast is actually not about movies. It's about punctuation.
That's right.
I had to take a guess.
Emphasis.
I'm stabbing in the dark, but I think that I've touched upon something here, and it's about punctuation and emphasis. But no, in all seriousness, I know that's very funny for you out there to hear my jokes. It's about movies, and one movie in particular. We're going to keep this podcast. It's going to be quick clip. It's going to be speedy. It's going to be to the point, and it's going to be about a movie specifically. And that movie is, can you insert like a drum roll sound effect right here?
I probably can.
All right. That'd be sweet.
I have many sounds at my fingertips.
Nice. I like it.
For the first episode of F This Movie, we thought, what movie should we talk about for the first episode of F This Movie podcast?
Yes.
And there really was only one answer. And that answer is...
I know you're setting me up for a joke. I should name some other movie.
8 seconds?
8 seconds. Yes. Luke Wilson? Is that Luke Wilson?
Luke Perry.
Who's Luke Wilson?
Luke Wilson is...
Have I already like totally just
the guy
like
in the phone commercials.
If anyone who's like a film buff out there...
Wes Anderson.
If anyone's a film buff out there and they...
Like a film cricket?
A film cricket. And they're like, who's this asshole Doug who doesn't know... I mean, I know it's Luke Perry. Adoy. I worked at Blockbuster for like all of 6 months when I was 16 years old. I know. It was on the shelf. 8 seconds. They somehow put it before the A's, even though I guess you could put it with the
E's. They went numbers first.
They went numbers first.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know it's freaking Luke Perry. I'm going to try not to swear on this podcast.
No, I'm going
to
swear a lot, so
okay,
I don't
sweet.
Understand
oh, F why you're... Why do you say F this movie then? You mean like fudge this movie?
Yeah. It's like, fiddlesticks, this movie.
Fudge! So... anyway, the first, it's not about 8 seconds. It's not about Marmaduke. It's not about 8mm even.
Although... That is a pretty good idea.
That could be a future podcast.
That movie's so disturbing.
It is like, it's like a snuff film, but not.
It's like, it's not scary, but it's like creepy.
But it's not like creepy so much as it's like weird.
Yeah. So we decided to talk about the most successful movie ever made.
Ever, not even of 2010,
nope.
But of all time.
But also of 2010. But also of all time.
But also of all time. Oscar winner. Of special effects categories.
And cinematography.
And, please, I said special effects categories. Cinematographer, what does he do? He gets coffee.
The movie, of course, is James Cameron's Avatar, an IMAX 3D experience.
The IMAX 3D experience, I've determined, is the only way to watch this movie. Because if you watch it on your TV, and I'm going to put this out there right now. I've got a very nice setup at home. I think Patrick actually has the exact same setup that I have.
It's true, because we live together.
We do. We're like my two dads.
Yeah.
With our daughter.
We pretend to be women.
We're like bosom buddies.
Together.
No, we've got the exact, for whatever reason, total random, actually, we have the exact same
totally
setup.
Random. I was like in a weird mood, and so I bought that TV.
I was just doing the TV buying thing, and I bought it, so sue me. Anyway, we purchased the same TV unbeknownst to each other. We have a 55-inch LG LCD HDTV.
It really feels like you're bragging right now.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying my TV's kick-ass. And the fact is, it's a great TV. It's high def.
Yeah.
I've got a Blu-ray player. And I've watched this movie in the IMAX 3D experience. I've also watched it on my Blu-ray with the TV, and watching this on TV, it's not as good.
It's interesting that you say that, because I feel like we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Really? Okay. How do you want to start this thing?
I'm not real sure.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Do we have to do Tombstone? Do we?
Is this going to be like call out
Tombstone cast?
Tombstone cast.
I like Tombstone.
F this Tombstone. Okay, so Tombstone, the one scene with Val, Val Wilson, I think his name is.
Val Wilson.
He's all like, sallow.
You called down the thunder. You got it.
He's like, I'll be your wingman any day.
That movie is about silly facial hair. Okay. I don't know if we need to do a plot summary for Avatar, because I feel like most people have seen it. But
well, let's be honest. This is the first podcast of F This Movie. Yeah. And we have I know we've talked on the phone and by email about this podcast.
That's right.
We don't have...
We're on email.
I know. We're pretty great. We don't have any set parameter guidelines, but we do want to... I guess you want to lay some ground rules. What are the ground rules? You want to give a plot summary?
No hitting below the belt.
Okay. Biting?
Biting is okay.
Okay. Spitting?
No kissing on the mouth. Too intimate. I don't know. A plot summary of Avatar. Avatar is about a Marine named Jake Sully.
Oh, you mean Jake Sully.
Jake Sully.
I like that the woman in the movie says that right after. I mean, not right after, but maybe within 30 seconds after he says, she goes, what's your name? And he goes, Jake Sully.
Yeah.
And 30 seconds later, she's like,
I'm Jake Sully.
Right. And then she's like, oh, Jake Sully. Like, I know that you're a different species.
I have a question about that, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
Not about the name specifically, but about the relationship between the Navis and the Sky People.
Okay.
Jake Sully is a Marine whose brother is a scientist. His brother is killed for the paper in his wallet.
Which could mean a couple things. Yeah. I'm thinking it means currency. You had a different theory.
I went with the number to Domino's. They have that in the future, right? It's the only pizza place left.
Well, Domino's, I don't know if you heard this podcast. Podcast audience who's listened to this podcast for the first time, but Domino's has a new recipe. And I think the new recipe was so successful. It existed. What year does this movie take place?
The future.
The future.
Events like these will affect us all in the future.
Is it the not too distant future?
No, I'm pretty sure it's the distant
future. So it's not Indian Ocean present day. Okay, go on.
He's a Marine. His brother is killed, but a team of scientists have put all this money into this thing called an avatar for the planet of Pandora.
It's not even a planet. It's a satellite.
It's a satellite. I'm sorry.
For like a gas
where they
giant.
Build these avatars, which are like aliens that you lay in a tanning bed and you're hooked up. Your mind is linked up to theirs, and then you can move around as this alien. The aliens are called the Navi. They're these giant blue, like warrior people.
Well, if anything, I've learned about from writers and filmmakers who've done aliens and sympathetic creatures, you want to make the alien as kind of like distant to humans as possible. You want to make them as unrelatable as, I'm kidding, because these things are 9 feet, I think they said 9 to 10 feet tall.
Which you forget until the very end of the movie.
I guess you do, but still there's...
Because you really only see them interact with each other until the end, when all of a sudden it's like, oh right, they're way bigger than
people.
And
it's so odd, because I know that obviously if they're amongst themselves, you kind of forget that point,
right.
But still it's like, this is such a weird choice to make.
I mean,
I have an issue with a lot of the design, which we'll get to, and again, I'm no James Cameron. I don't make billion-dollar movies, but I do think that there's a couple... What James Cameron needs, not a swift kick in the ass, but James Cameron needs a person, a best friend, if you will, to tell him, maybe a wife? I don't know if he's got different wives. I know
he keeps marrying people that he's in movies with, or people, that he directs.
He actually married Zoe Saldana, I think.
Oh, yay! But her avatar.
I think
Neytiri Cameron.
What Neytiri should do, what he needs is a person to say, like, stop right there, think about that for more than 2 seconds, and really determine if that's the best course of action. Because I think that, like, any good wife or good friend will do, like, speak truth to power, is to say, like, you obviously are the man making this movie, but you need to, like, maybe make... And I'm going to put this caveat out there also. I know that District 9, that those aliens are also not very... sympathetic, because they are disgusting looking.
Right, that's sort of by design.
Right, that they're like these, horrible creatures, brooms. And it somehow works. I know that there's exceptions to the rule, but I think the rule generally states you shouldn't make them a good human and a half taller than the people that were supposed... Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent.
Anyway,
I'm also wearing my running pants.
Squishy pants! Avatar pants.
I had to run here.
So he goes to Pandora, he gets his own avatar, There is a team of scientists aboard Pandora or on Pandora, and then there's also
looks like the Pentagon,
like a corporation that's there mining for unobtainium, a very valuable substance.
Well, it's worth $20 million a kilo back on Earth.
It's a lot of cheddar. And anyway, there's also
The Marine also is handicapped.
Right? Yeah, he's in a wheelchair.
He's in a wheelchair,
but his avatar is not.
Right, and his avatar is actually based.
His love is real.
Off of his brother, which is his twin brother, got killed.
So that's the only reason he's able to inhabit the avatar, and they didn't want to blow their investment. So
the best movies are described in multiple sentences where you go back and correct it.
Well, it is a very simple plot, but it's like the setup because it is science fiction or fantasy or whatever. Then there's also a team of like ex-military kind of Blackwater
mercenaries. Yeah.
There as like security for this corporation. And ultimately, they ask Jake Sully to, in the guise of his avatar, infiltrate the Na'vi, learn about them, get them to move so that they can mine for unobtainium, which he agrees to do so that he can get his legs back. So he becomes a Na'vi. He falls in love with Neytiri, this girl Na'vi. And
like really quickly, too, I found.
Well, it's essentially Dances with Wolves, which we're not the first ones to point out, but... He loves being a Na'vi. He falls for the people. It was like, when this started, I was one way, but I've changed, and you've opened my eyes. And he wants to be a Na'vi, and then they fight, and they fuck shit up. We'll probably spoil Avatar. If you haven't seen Avatar...
You should stop the podcast right now, but actually don't, because we need the hits. We need the numbers. We need the audience.
I don't know why you would listen to an Avatar podcast having not seen it, but...
Maybe you're still on the fence. You're thinking,
this isn't the best place.
Billions of people have seen this, but I don't know if this movie will change my mind. that's a pretty good synopsis. Of course, what happens. And
right.
I don't know if we want... I mean, you could say that, like, the main character dies. I think you can say that.
You can say that.
But that's not what happened. In your face, F This Movie podcast.
Avatar. So the way I sort of want to approach Avatar is... We saw the movie
autobiographically.
We saw the movie together.
We did, holding hands.
Yeah, in IMAX 3D.
It wasn't a movie.
It was an experience, and we saw it like the second day it was out. So I actually had I didn't have any expectations. I really wanted to see the movie because James Cameron hasn't made a movie in 12 years and never really made a movie.
But there were still expectations based on that because there was just like...
I wanted to see it because it was a new James Cameron movie.
Well, even people were saying that this movie's going to change movies. I heard that before.
Yeah. But I guess I hadn't heard anyone come back and say,
there's
it's
no
great,
feedback yet,
it's awesome, you'll love it. So we saw it, and I was not crazy about it.
Yes, I remember. In fact, we saw it, and I wasn't crazy about it, but I actually liked it more than you did. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I left the theater thinking, like, that wasn't so bad.
Right.
It was long, and it was kind of like, you know, I've seen this before, obviously, but it wasn't like this horrible... show. I really enjoyed what I saw. I remember we had this long conversation in the lobby of the theater, and you know, time has passed. And I want to point out, like, you've actually said before, I don't know if it's what you've said or if you've heard this before, but obviously people, when you leave a movie, typically have three reactions. Either you like don't think about it, you either like it more or dislike it more.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that Avatar, as I left it, and again, I should clarify that I saw it in theater the second day it came out, and then watched it recently on DVD or Blu-ray.
Blu-ray,
that's not a digital versatile disc.
Blu-ray.
I watched it on Blu-ray recently, so it's been months. I mean, when did it come out?
It came out in December, like mid-December.
Okay, so I mean, it's been 6 months roughly since I've seen it. So I watched it again, and since I saw it then, and again, I fully admit that I liked it. But when I left it, I started to just pick it apart in my head and just kind of didn't like certain things about it. And just, I was kind of like, man, F that movie.
Yeah, call back. F this movie.
You're dead, Mallrat.
And I kind of had the same reaction where I was just kind of unimpressed. And the dialogue really bothered me. And the story was very kind of familiar. And even the sort of visual aspect of the movie, which was what everybody sold me on or tried to sell me on after the fact, that it was visually amazing, that it was... such an experience, and it was unlike any movie you've ever seen. Even on that level, the movie didn't really engage me. And so months pass, and
you sound like a douche.
Keep having to hear about how great it is, how much everybody loves it. People want to kill themselves because they can't live on Pandora. And I, of course, more resistant to the movie.
Right.
I'm just like, what?
Well, when you hear that stuff too, it just makes you even more kind of like, are you kidding me? This movie that I didn't have I had a lukewarm reaction to,
right.
Or even me, like I had a warm reaction to, but now having since like, it's, I haven't thought about it, or I've just, right. when I do think about it, I'm like, oh, that didn't really make much sense.
It gets nominated for a bunch of Oscars.
And right.
Like, what is going on?
Its Oscar success was predicated on, I think, you know, like, as you point out too, that it's box office success. Right. If that movie right. tanked, it would not be up for any Oscars aside right. from the technical, the achievements and, you know, all those, cause that's obviously, it's undoubtedly, you know, very, you know, I don't know, just like the technology that went into this was just right. amazing.
Well, he spent years inventing new cameras right. and inventing new 3D
process. You can't take that away from the guy as right. much as you want to.
I don't want to, and even as the movie was making a shitload of money, I don't think I ever resented that. Because like I'm really glad James Cameron exists, and if somebody is going to be super successful, in some ways I'm glad it's him, only because he really puts it all out there.
Yeah.
Like he is very ambitious. He's constantly pushing stuff forward. And he really risks it all every time he makes a movie, it's basically the most expensive movie ever made, which I mean, isn't necessarily to be commended because he has single-handedly, I think, pushed the budgets of movies
right.
up, but at least as they say, the money's on the screen.
Right. Like,
and you understand why he spends the money, and he's always trying to push shit forward.
Yeah, way more than, I mean, I can't think of an example. This is a horrible podcast, by the way, because I can't think of other movie examples. But to your point, how he pushes budgets forward, obviously spending $500 million making
right.
this movie, or, I mean, Titanic, what was Titanic at the time? It was $100 million, maybe, or
two? No, Terminator 2 was the first
was $100 million. So and it's pushed everything up.
Probably 200, 250.
And you see these other movies like that are just throwaway. I can't think of, I'm sure you can think of a better example, but like something that's, you know, is not going to make any money, but for whatever reason, it costs $100 million
right,
to make.
Right, right.
Because, and there's nothing that's unique, original on screen. It's just that the actor salaries,
right.
the bad special effects, you know, it, whatever.
Right. So I never really resented that aspect of it, but I just felt like, what bothered me was James Cameron spent, you know, 12 years sort of building this story. He first had the idea about 12 years ago to do this movie and said to himself at the time, like, the technology's not there yet. I can't do it. But he's been making it for probably like 4 years in terms of developing the technology and actually shooting it. And then of course all the post-production, because it's all basically just motion capture and they have to animate everything. So he spent about 4 years actually physically making the movie.
Do you think that Avatar is better than Demolition Man?
That's a tough call.
Really? Cause the reason I bring this up is they both have cryo sleep. I think in Demolition Man is called cryo prison, but you know, I think they're both tapping into something.
I remember when I was saying it, that I just wished that if he spent four years.
By the way,
years,
I'm totally here for color commentary. Nothing else. You are the play by play.
If he spent, you know, 12 years, 4 years, whatever, making this movie, that why not attempt to tell a better story? And actually, I've even revised my opinion on that a little bit. I don't mind that the story is really familiar. Most stories are.
Right.
What bothers me is that he writes terrible dialogue.
Yeah, I think that's way more.
If he had paid as
offensive.
Much attention to the script as he did to every other element of the movie, it could have been like a genuine classic.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I mean, most stories, like you said, are just good versus evil or,
right, right.
you know, the
hero's
same,
journey.
Hero's journey.
Right.
But and this is a great segue, if I may,
yeah.
to go into, I think that some of the first lines of dialogue are just so cliched
right.
that it's just, it's you could tell it was this no effort. Like he obviously has a direction in which he's going. He's at point A, he wants to get to point B. So obviously the most logical way for him to go from point A to point B is to say, like when the guy gets off on the wheelchair and another soldier goes, meals on wheels. And
right.
I'm just thinking like, okay, this is the distant future. And I don't even know what meals on wheels means in 2010. And that's like the dumbest example I could think of right now to describe like a very dumb, like I get it. The point is that this Marine, this other soldier wants to make fun of a guy in a wheelchair. But to do it in such a way that just is like such a lame insult. And like,
right.
And likewise, I think the security officer, the guy in charge of security, one of the first things he says is you're not in Kansas anymore.
Right.
And that to me is like, I think the worst sitcom, some Tyler Perry sitcom would use that line of dialogue. It just seems to me like the epitome of lazy. And I think that, again, you have these characters that could be interesting. You've got the story that, again, like, as you point out, at first you might find like, oh, I'm offended because this could be so much more. But you're like, you know what? Okay, I'll grant you an easy story because it's a very complex world. Right. It's a very, you know, it's like you said, science fiction takes a lot to explain. It takes a lot to kind of immerse yourself in this world. But you could just go that extra route and just not be like, if he'd said, like, I want to say, I keep saying this, but you pointed out something, I think, that a lot of those lines of dialogue don't have to be rewritten. Like, for example, well, the not in Kansas, maybe you want to introduce it like this world is very different. But some of those lines of dialogue just don't need to be there. That you could just delete that from like backspace on your keyboard and make the movie just a hair better.
There's a great example of that at the end, which I don't know how detailed I should get about it. But they're in this final battle. Jake Sully and Colonel Quaritch, who is the main bad guy, played by, I think, Stephen Lang in a cartoonish way, and almost every one of his lines is bad.
that's the you're not against anymore. By the way, he is ripped. I don't know, like, is that his real body?
I don't know.
He's
the party crasher from The Hard Way. Remember The Hard Way?
Yeah, I do.
He's the party crasher.
I like also, by the way, too, he's ripped and he's like the soldier. When he said his first day on Pandora, he got that scar. Yeah, yeah. And he says, I could get it fixed, but I don't want to.
Right.
I
just that like, reminds me of the danger that's out there.
Right.
But at the
which
end,
that line of dialogue is just to say, like, yeah, because we can fix a spine, like you could fix your freaking whatever.
Right. At the end, though, there's like a showdown and Jake Sully as the Avatar, you know, which I guess we could just say Jake Sully or Jake Sully.
Yeah, Jake Sully is the Avatar. Jake Sully is the right. humanoid.
So Jake Sully, like, jumps in front of Colonel Quaritch in his robo suit and says, like, give it up, Quaritch. It's all over. Because most of the military has been killed by the Na'vi. And Quaritch responds, like, not while I'm still breathing. And Jake Sully says, I was hoping you would say that. And then they fight. And there's three lines of dialogue that don't need to be there.
Absolutely not.
Because at this point, I mean, they both just really want to kill each other, right? So,
well, at this point, it's a war movie. It's a movie like,
because why does Jake Sully even say, like, give it up, it's over?
Right.
What he's going to be like, stop fighting and put your guns down now.
Right.
Like, we're done. We're not going to actually fight. Like, of course, they're going to kill each other. Someone is going to die. So,
and
why
I get
do
that
they
obviously
need to...
in movies, you write lines of dialogue to kind of segue those types of things and to kind of fill the space. Excuse me. That was an F this burp, by the way. But you're right. It's like those things don't need to exist. I'm a huge fan of war movies, and I think we're lucky in this day and age. We've got like Band of Brothers and Pacific, and I think that even those shows and movies like Saving Private Ryan or like some of the better war movies out there, they're trying to get away from the cliche because it's been done.
Saving Private Ryan's not at all trying to get away from cliche.
I said better movies than Saving Private Ryan. Like, but I think Band of Brothers and Pacific are better and trying to, because obviously in 2000, I think Band of Brothers was about 2002 or something. I mean, it was a long time ago. And Pacific obviously is this year. We're trying to, it's been done before. You're trying to write new dialogue and not just be the same old rehashed garbage. So it stands out, especially when you're watching like better stuff that kind of is just doing it better. And you're like, wow, this is like supposed to be the best movie of the year. It's supposed to be this, you know, jaw dropping, visually amazing thing. And it's like, that's what we're fed. And I think, honestly, I don't want to boil it down to like dumbly, but I think my biggest issue, as you point out, is like with the dialogue. It's just the dialogue. Yeah. If it was different, I think my whole take on it would be like, well, you know what? It's because you get Dances with Wolves, a very basic story.
Right.
I don't think there's any like really clear. I'm sure there's some. I haven't seen it.
It's been too long since I've seen it. I'm sure there's bad lines.
But I do just remember it being a little more like trying to comment on it in a different way and trying to be more thoughtful about it. I think that's what this movie lacks is thoughtfulness.
Well, but it has this weird manufactured thoughtfulness.
Great point.
Connecting
yeah.
to the earth and the spirits, right? And there's a lot of just nonsensical. It's James Cameron trying to force a message in there and
a disingenuous message because it's all just, I mean, I don't know.
It's not even that it's disingenuous because I know that he sincerely means it, but it doesn't need it. Just tell a straightforward story without this these environmental messages and all that. Talking about the script, which is the big issue with the movie, obviously, there's a quote. It's not mine. I don't remember where I heard it.
It's probably mine.
I want to say this is yours. You said this to me once. You sat me down and said, listen.
Doug said that, just to clarify.
Lots of good scripts.
Wait, I didn't say this.
Lots of good scripts have been turned into bad movies.
Okay.
But it's almost impossible to turn a bad script into a good movie.
I'm so smart.
You really are.
I'm very deep.
You blew my mind that day. And that's sort of the issue with Avatar, is that it doesn't have a bad script in terms of its structure.
It's all there, yeah. It's all like...
But he knows how to pace a movie, and he knows how to tell a story.
Except, finish your point, I'll get back to pacing in a second.
He knows how to tell a story. It's just the way that it's filled in with the dialogue. And we'll get to the pacing in one second. But I want to say something else, because I find that there are sort of three reactions to Avatar, which is, one, the people that just love it unconditionally. And they end up being more like apologists. Like, they'll tell you that all these cliched lines of dialogue, it's actually James Cameron, like, paying tribute to movies that have influenced him. And it's supposed to be like that because it's archetypal. It's not supposed to be original. And I find that to be kind of bullshit. Especially if you look at James Cameron's filmography, he has a bad ear for dialogue.
Right.
He always has.
It would be different if it was a Kaufman, you know, would write a movie like this.
Right.
And you
could pick it out and say, like, oh, this is clearly deliberate.
Yeah.
James Cameron has always...
It's not deliberate.
...had a bad ear for dialogue.
It's like you said, it's apologist.
Right.
It's like...
The flip side of that is the haters, who were just like, fuck everything about that movie, which for a few months is where I found myself. But I've turned around somewhat, and that's eventually where I want to go to on this. And then there's people in the middle who are just like, the visuals are great, and it's an experience, and it's not like anything else, but it was always like a qualified recommendation.
Right.
It was like, it's really, you know, you should go see it. It's visually amazing.
But I think I was like that.
But
I think I was like that for a while because, you know, for a lot of people.
Which is sort of as enthusiastic as you can be.
Absolutely.
Like, I recognize its flaws, but.
But I remember talking to people and, you know, saying like, this movie is definitely this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want the experience and want to be part of like, and totally take it from not from about the movie, but make it about culture. Like if you want to be part of like the cultural lifeline and like know what's going on and be aware of like 2009, 2010 cinema and to a greater extent, like just the culture, pop culture, like you should experience this. But you're right. I remember I was in my fiance's house, her family's house, and her brother, who's younger, and her brother's friend were there, and they were like, they had just seen it. It was probably January, and they were just like, this movie, they were just, I don't want to say that the youngness, because I'm young, and I'm pretty dumb, obviously. I don't know who Perry is. I feel really badly about that. Can you edit that?
I'm going to cut that. Although now I also have to cut out this reference to it.
So
you're
turning
F this movie into Swiss cheese. Thank you, James Cameron, for writing that line of dialogue.
Into cheddar. So they had just come off it, and they were on this high because it was, again, it's this experience. It is like, it is when you put those glasses on and you're like, you're not really a film person, you are kind of blown away by it. But I wasn't being a hater, but I was definitely like, I think my response to them was, tell me that you really liked Avatar. I'll give my response.
I really liked Avatar.
Really? That was my response.
Yeah.
And then they're like, and I saw their looks change, and they were kind of like, why? And they don't know that I like films, and they don't know that I watch a lot of stuff. But like, I just
call them films. That's how I know you're serious. That's how I know you're serious.
I own it on DVD. Is how you know I like something. They don't know that I'm I watch a lot of movies. But I just kind of explain. I'm like, yeah, you know, I agree. Like, it was this experience, and it was kind of like when it was a fun ride. But don't you think the dialogue is awful? And as soon as you kind of start poking holes in their, you know, whatever their preconceived notion about it, they kind of come around. It was so quick, actually, how quickly they were kind of like, oh, I kind of, not like they were saying, I guess you're right, and I've changed my tune, because it's not obvious, it doesn't need to be something like that, but it's like they were so quick to be like, yeah, you're right. I mean, they weren't defending it in that respect.
Right, but I mean, ultimately, they're going to say, like, yeah, but I like it anyway.
Right.
And that's...
And who's to say, like, when they went back to college or, you know, like, in their class, and they're probably, oh, yeah, it was awesome, you know, like, they're not taking what this old man has to say, you know.
Well, so when you see a movie, and again, you sort of opened with this in terms of, like, you either like it or you hate it or...
Right, you either, and you have reactions to when you leave it, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like, you're either sort of, and this is something I've been saying too much lately, but, like, you see a movie...
Supposedly.
You go to the library, you get a movie, supposedly, okay? Especially a movie.
Oh, that's great. Luke Perry.
You see a You see a movie, you're ultimately either on board with the movie or you're not.
Right.
Like, even if it's 51% to 49%, 51% of you likes the movie, even if you think 49% of it sucks, you're either on board with it or you're not. So when you're trying to tell somebody, like, yeah, but the dialogue is bad, their response likely is like, yeah, but I still like it.
Yeah.
And that's what that means, to be on board with the movie. And when I saw Avatar, I was not on board with it.
And I was. Probably. We're probably the same distance apart.
Right.
Because we weren't passionate. Well, you were kind of became a hater.
Yeah, eventually. And I don't even necessarily know why. Because when we walked out of it, I think I just felt disappointed more than anything else. But a strange thing has happened. And that's part of what I wanted to talk about with Avatar. Is just the way that sometimes we can reassess movies. And I don't know if you have examples of this in your own life.
Yes. Memphis Bell, not as good as I remember.
That happened. But does the flip side ever happen?
Mm.
Because Avatar came out on Blu-ray, and I purchased
Avatar.
Avatar came out on Blu-ray.
James Cameron's
Avatar on Blu-ray. And I purchased it.
That's how I can tell you're serious.
Yeah.
You didn't just buy it.
I own it. I purchased it. I purchased a film on Blu-ray. And largely to sort of see how I felt about the movie, but also because I knew that we were planning to do this movie, Avatar, and I wanted to see it again before we did. And I watched it, and I found myself, it didn't become a better movie in any way. It's still the same movie I saw, but I liked it more.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know, because then the next day, I was like, I'm going to put it on again. I watched it twice
in
2 days. That's
kind of crazy.
Then, a few days later, I knew that it was going away from theaters for good. Theaters. It was no longer going to be.
I know where you're going. You saw it in the theater again?
I went at 11 o'clock at night on a Friday because it was only one showing, because the IMAX screens were being used up by How to Train Your Dragon. But at 11 o'clock at night, they showed it in IMAX 3D. And because I had sort of come around on the movie, I wanted to.
You want that experience again.
Yeah, I did.
The IMAX 3D experience.
The IMAX 3D experience. Because that part of the movie didn't really mean that much to me either. It wasn't like, I didn't like the movie, but the IMAX 3D was super cool when I first saw it. And since I'd kind of come around on the movie, I guess I just wanted to see if I could have a better experience, or if I could even have a better memory going forward. I didn't necessarily think, I mean, it was cool to see it that way again, but I still maintain.
Well, it's also interesting because it's like, you know, you're probably never going to, I mean, not never say never, because they might bring it back, but you probably won't see it IMAX 3D.
Which was kind of why I did that, and especially at 11 o'clock at night. I don't remember the last time I went to a movie at 11 o'clock at night.
You're an old man.
Tired. I didn't necessarily think it was any better in IMAX 3D than I did at home.
Okay.
I liked it about the same.
I'm still confused as to, I'm trying to wrap my mind around what specifically about watching this at home. Okay, so you told me that when you watched it in the theater the first time, you had this negative reaction to it.
Yeah.
And then you became a hater.
Right.
You drank the haterade, which is the worst expression ever, by the way.
Which I try not to do in my life, not drink haterade, that I do. But I try not to be the guy who starts pulling in the opposite direction just for the sake of doing
it. Well, right, and you weren't doing, I don't think that's the case in this situation.
It might have been a little bit, I don't know.
But you saw it, you didn't like it, you became a hater, and then you saw it again on Blu-ray, and you kind of liked it, and you came around.
Right.
And you saw it in the theater.
I found it very watchable. And I think that's almost as much as I can say. And eventually I grew to kind of like it.
It's not even like an F this movie. It's more like a kiss this movie. Is it like,
yeah, I mean,
hold
again,
this movie's hand?
Because it is not a better movie. My original assessment, I think, still holds. It is filled with bad dialogue.
Right. So it's not the story. It's not the story. It's not the script. It's not this. So it's just a watchable movie. You just found it watchable.
Yeah, maybe.
The experience didn't really change it for you.
Not really. And honestly, I think part of that is because the fact that he shot it for 3D means that all of the compositions have a lot of depth to begin with.
I noticed that too.
It's not shit reaching out.
Definitely.
Everything has a lot of depth. And watching it on Blu-ray, that all comes across.
I mentioned this, almost
don't need the 3D.
We talked on the phone briefly before this, and I mentioned that I put it on last night, and I turned it off right before I turned it off. I stood by my screen, like a foot from my screen, and just watched it, just because I was kind of blown away just by the Blu-ray. It was like really nice looking.
Yeah.
And it was like this immersive thing, even on the thing. However, I will say that my issue with it, and this is something actually I've heard from a couple different people, it looks, even though it's an awesome, I know James Cameron invented new technology, there's different cameras, there's different, 3D effects and different, I'm sure, rendering technology and all this different stuff.
Right.
When it comes down to it, though, on 2D, on a Blu-ray, on my TV screen, it looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
It doesn't have this, it doesn't look real.
I think part of that is because everything was is so bright because of 3D. James Cameron sort of compensated for the fact that you're going to be wearing these glasses, so he brightened everything so much that even the human scenes, the live action people, everything is so lit, it's so bright.
But it really,
it looks cartoonish.
It does. I mean, I don't want to say it looks like a cartoon. Doesn't look like a drawn Disney cartoon, but it looks like a Pixar thing,
which it ultimately is,
right? Or anything else,
just a CG
Shrek the Third
animated Shrek Ever After. Shrek.
It is. I mean, and in that respect, it's kind of like, wow, how much money is spent on those movies? I just kind of think about that. I'm just thinking
By the way, those movies cost hundreds of millions of dollars too.
Yeah, and if they bank though, because all those kids go see them. You know,
but that's crazy.
Marmaduke will make money. Marmaduke looks like the biggest piece of garbage I've ever seen in my life. But so I watched it, and it's like. Yeah. But I will also say, because you touched upon. The look of the movie.
Yeah.
And I know we've said before it's visually amazing. But I want to say that I wasn't as aware of it when I first saw it, but I found when I watched it last night, or I watched parts of it last night, that it really is, as you point out, it's super bright.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, and I know that this is on purpose, and I get this audience, that it's way super colorful.
Yeah.
It also helps it, I mean, that colorfulness and the brightness makes it look more cartoonish.
Right.
But I just have to say, let's take stock of all the animals on Earth. You've got,
I know exactly where you're going, and I completely agree with this. And, that's from the first time I saw it to now. That has not changed.
I'm just saying, because not everyone can read my mind like you can, Patrick. The fact is, you've got, bears and dogs and birds and, you've got these different creatures.
And that's it. Bears, dogs, and birds. I think you've named them all.
Bears. You've got cubs. You've got... black hawks, black space hawks. You've got these different creatures in on Earth. You've got fish and all these, just all these different creatures. And for the most part, these creatures, two things. One is that they're not these jagged-edged, violent, vicious things with teeth and with razor blades and with, antenna and this, different flapping wings and stuff. You've got these creatures who obviously are have fur and have teeth and that can obviously wield their teeth and wield their claws when they're threatened or when they're attacking something. But for the most part, they're everything seems fairly docile.
Mm-hmm.
The only time the only time you see really bizarre creatures is typically these new sea creatures. You see fish and the deep sea creatures that have glowing tentacles and stuff, obviously. So in the ocean, you've got fish and you've got these urchins and things like that, that are really alien, for lack of a better word. But for the most part, any land-dwelling creature is just I know there's some creepy snakes and some creepy lizards out there, but they're really, hard to find. And the second point is, and this is really boring, I'm sorry, the second point is not just that, our creatures are very kind of benign-looking, is that most of them blend in with everything else, because that's the whole fucking point of survival.
Right.
I know we've got cardinals that are bright red, and the reason for those bright red cardinals is to attract the female species, and likewise, there's other species out there that have colorful things to attract their mates. But for the most part, it's all about survival. And all of these animals, I was watching it last night, that not only are they colorful with these dangling things that would Darwin would just say these things wouldn't last a day.
Right.
But they all have, instead of a four-legged dog, it's got six legs. It's just, it seems like this thing of more everything at the screen. Cameron is just, I just think that a person, I just imagine, this is my own fantasy in my head, that a person drew, rendered I've got this great creature that we can use in this one scene, and here's a sketch I drew, and Cameron's response is, add two more legs and an antenna, and I love it.
Some of it has the feel of a kid in seventh grade drawing a fucked up creature on the back
of his
notebook.
That's a great way to put it.
George Lucas suffers from a lot of that in the Star Wars prequels particularly, but also when he went back and added new weird creatures to the special editions.
Yeah, to your point, you watch the first movies, the sequels, or the four through six, four, five, and six, And you've got
these.
That
we like have to be so specific. I know, it sucks. Now.
But like, you're watching these people in the bar, and they're just like, it's literally like this latex thing. Right. Like, I'm sure it's holdovers from other like TV shows and other B movies and stuff. But it looks more real because it's dirty, it's dark, it's mysterious, as opposed to this like flamboyant peacock. I mean, literally, the peacock is the only thing we have. Like, really, it's a world full of peacocks.
Well, and that was an issue that I had.
Even those vicious like lizard dogs that are all black have six legs and these teeth, and they're just like. I mean, they're horrible looking. I get it. It's a movie. I get it. They're horrifying. They give me nightmares. Mission accomplished.
It was an issue I had when I first saw the movie, and that part of it hasn't changed, which is that everybody talks about how visually amazing it is, and I get it. There's depth to the image, and it was in 3D, but I never really was crazy about the actual design of any of the stuff on Pandora.
Well, that even goes back to the whole thing with the Na'vi themselves.
So I was not engaged by it visually.
Right. And the Na'vi themselves, and we talked about this earlier, are 9 feet tall and look like black cat people that are blue with like their cat eyes, but their black noses. I mean, I know that sounds kind of like fairly racist, I suppose, and I don't mean to sound racist, although
this
I am
the fairly racist
horrible
past.
Racist. F this racist. Racism.
F this equality.
But it really is just like, I mean, you can't really... I know that you can say that they're inspired by African American or Africans, I guess tribal, and they're inspired by Native Americans and cats, and they're 9 feet tall and they're blue. It's just like with it's very odd. It's you know, I mean, you could have gone a little more, I don't know, not so stereotyped, I guess.
Well, and again, that's part of what I didn't understand. Even when I disliked the movie more, and everybody is telling me, oh, but visually it's amazing. My feeling was always, but I wasn't that engaged by. The visuals on screen, at least in terms of what's designed.
Patrick, I am no scientist.
Sure.
I've been taken to a
court
of law. I have
to rethink all of this.
I have been taken, I've been sued, and it's been proven that I am no scientist. But I do, I am offended sometimes when there's stuff in movies. Like, I'm the guy in a movie when a person lights a match below a sprinkler, and every sprinkler head on the floor explodes in water. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, I think to myself, well, that can't happen because sprinkler systems aren't designed to go all at once. They're designed to go one at a time. I know this because of my past and my work and my history. So don't challenge me, assholes. So I am the person out there who's like, well, that doesn't make much sense because in real life, it wouldn't happen like that. And I know that like that's kind of messed up because obviously it's a movie. You're supposed to immerse yourself. It's supposed to be fantasy, especially when it's a fantasy movie. But I can't help but think to myself, these creatures, and again, I'm not going to talk about that anymore, but their creatures are very far-fetched. I know that they're a seventh grade drawing of whatever, but also like floating mountains and things that you can't like logically. I can understand a creature that exists like that, like a six-legged creature. We have six-legged creatures on Earth.
That's true.
But a floating mountain,
they're called cows.
I don't You've seen some fucked up cows. I can't wrap my head around a floating mountain. Why can't it just be like a really awesome looking mountain? It's got to be the famous floating mountains of
the Hallelujah Mountains.
Yes,
which even that line confuses me because I wonder is that the name that the scientists have given the mountains? That's not what the Na'vi called them, right? Because why did the Na'vi even know the word Hallelujah?
Because they're big fans of Handel's Messiah. by the way, you know I'm into music because I said Handel instead of Handel. Go on, Patrick.
Film. There are, aside from the dialogue issues, there are some script things that bother me. Like the central conceit that Jake Sully, that it was supposed to be his brother is killed, and then it's him. I think that's an interesting premise.
Sure.
But I don't ever think it's really exploited. He could be any guy learning to be this Na'vi. I mean... There's another scientist played by
Norman.
Joel David Moore, who is sort of learning to be a Na'vi at the same time.
He's logged 520 hours in the simulator. He studied Na'vi for all these years.
I just don't feel like that conceit is really dealt with at all. And then in the middle of the movie, there's tension between Norman and Jake Sully.
Yes, not Jake Sully.
Because Norman resents him because he's logged 500 hours and here's Jake Sully is a better Na'vi. And he's in closer with the people than Norman, and he resents that.
It's explained because Jake Sully has a gorgeous brain.
But then, like, a scene later, there's voiceover where Jake Sully says, like, we're getting along better. It's never resolved.
Yeah.
It's just written away. And it's the movie's filled with shortcuts like that, like the fact that...
Well, can I talk about... We talked briefly on pacing. You talked about pacing. Yeah, yeah. This obviously isn't... Your point isn't necessarily a pacing point, I suppose. But I think that they're linked.
Yeah.
And you pointed out something also. I'm just saying, you did this, and you told me this. And this is why I'm repeating what you've told me, because otherwise it'd just be a whole fucking Patrick podcast.
Right?
So the fact is, I'm just repeating what you've told me. But you told me also that... a big pacing issue, which, you know, here's the thing. You watch a movie and it's like, this doesn't feel right. And then you realize why it doesn't feel right is because something is stuck in there in order to explain something later.
Right.
And obviously I know that there's rules for screenplay writing and stuff. I've read the books. I've never written a script. I've tried. I failed. Thank you. That there are rules, and this is explored, I know, in adaptation too, where like the two brothers, obviously, like one writes a script that's like very by the numbers, and like on page 30 this happens, and page 60 this happens, blah blah blah. And this is this feels very much like a by the numbers script, like this has to happen at this point.
Well, the rule is if you see a gun in the first act,
right,
you have to be able to transfer a human into a Navi in the third.
Thank you for making that segue, because there's a scene in which it's Sigourney Weaver's character, yeah, right? She's
who is
dying.
A bad character.
Oh my god, where's my cigarette? Something's wrong with this. It's Sigourney Weaver
character.
Is a talented actress.
Yeah,
I think that she was. I don't even know. I don't think she wanted to be on that movie or something.
Well, you don't even totally understand the function of that character, except that she's, you know, sort of the science equivalent of Colonel Quaritch. So you have these two figureheads,
right?
But beyond that, she doesn't really have a part to play.
And she also is more annoying than the Colonel.
She's kind of stranded in that part. But yeah, I know exactly where you're
going. The point, yeah. So she's about to die, and they take her to this tree of not. It's not Awa, is it Awa? I thought.
Well, no, Awa is the goddess that lives in the mall.
Okay.
They take her to the Tree of Souls.
The Tree of Souls.
Yeah.
And they try to by the way, this is all very convenient, and I'm not even going to go into this like the science aspect of it because I, you know, again, I'm no scientist.
Right.
But I do know that like it sounds pretty far fetched. It's very convenient. I should say it's very convenient that you can transfer a body, a human body, through this Tree of Souls to a Na'vi avatar for real. And they do it in the middle of right before the third act, I think, right? Or
yeah, I mean, it's kind of what kicks off the third act. Yeah.
Which is like it comes to a screech. The movie is like stopped in its tracks. It's a screeching halt. It's just this weird, like slow, deliberate, kind of like long. Actually, it's probably not even that long. It just feels long.
Right.
The scene, which you're like, okay,
we're
advancing towards this like kind of like big climactic battle, which I'm not even like saying we need to get to. Like, I'm not a person that says every movie has to end with a big battle or big fight scene. But that's where this is obviously going. So why stop it? And this movie's already over 3 hours.
It's like 2.5.
I'm sticking with my first. I think it's over 3 hours. That's how it felt to me. No, it's a long movie, and to do this, I get it because that's. At the end of the movie, you know, Jake Sully has to transfer his avatar.
Right. So it needs to be set up that it's possible, but they do it kind of at a bad time.
Yeah, it just seems... I mean, I get that it makes sense that, like, at this point, this character has to die, and this character, you know, it's like... But it's just like, you've got so much going on, you don't know... It's like, there's too much on the screen at that point.
Right.
So,
and again, maybe the more times you see something because you know what to anticipate, those problems begin to bother you less and less. And I wonder if... Part of the fact that I've come around on it, it has to do with, and this, again, happens a lot when you could see a movie in the theater and not like it, and then you watch it again at home, and it's better than you remember, and it's not, the movie hasn't changed, you have, because you're not seeing it for the movie that you want it to be, you're seeing it for the movie that it is, mm-hmm. because you go into a movie, you have an idea of what it is in your head, and then the movie either exceeds or falls short of those expectations, and
this
to
is
me,
the,
Avatar did.
My mind is blown right now.
No,
that is the deepest thing
your
I've
mind
ever heard.
Is everywhere. But
by the way, to answer your earlier
seeing
question,
it again, now it's like I know what Avatar is. I can reassess it with more realistic expectations.
I don't know if I've ever seen a movie. I'm sure I have. I got to think that I have where I've.
I don't know if
I didn't
I can't
like
think
it
of an example
first.
Right where you like have decided that you do like. I've heard you go the other way a bunch of times.
Oh, I'm all the time. I'm like because I am so easily suckered by movies. I'm like that movie's great.
But
I
come around on.
Let
stuff
me say
a
this.
Lot.
I'll put this out there for
maybe
the
I'm
this
too
movie
quick to hate
F this movie podcast audience. When I first saw Austin Powers 2, I thought it was the funniest movie I'd ever seen, and I remember I bought it on DVD.
Yeah.
And this is like when DVDs, I think, were pretty new.
Yeah.
It was my first, one of my first probably 10 DVDs. I watched it, and I think it was by myself with my mouth open the entire time, like, oh my God, this is such a piece of shit.
Well, and even that's not as fair an example, because if you go see that movie the night it opens in a crowded theater,
it was a lot of fun.
You're very caught up. Because Mike Myers does this fucking thing where his movies hold for laughs. And I didn't realize it until I watched, like, Wayne's World at home. Because every time I saw Wayne's World in the theater, which was, like, 3 or 4 times, there were big laughs. And it was fun. And then you watch it at home, and there's these long spaces between jokes because this movie is fucking holding for laughs.
It's
and
Austin so Powers odd. Does that yeah, same it's so shit. Weird.
Yeah.
But so I don't know if I can't think of an example right now where I've seen a movie.
So that I wonder if it's just that I'm too quick to leave a movie and be like, I didn't like it.
How about this, F This Movie podcast audience? Yeah. If you can email us and let us know what movies that you saw that you first didn't like and you later came around on.
FThisMoviePodcast@gmail.com.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We have to buy that now, don't we?
Shit.
The Gmail addresses
Gmails
cost
are
money,
pricey.
Right? They cost money to buy, right?
Lots, actually. So send in money also via email.
Via our PayPal account, which we also have to set up now. Shit.
That's
a very expensive
bad idea. This whole thing is a bad idea. I want to say something that I find interesting about James Cameron, because James Cameron's movies are all sort of...
He's the king of the world!
He's a douchebag, let's face it, because when he gets up at the Golden Globes and gives a speech in Na'vi and then says, that means this, and that's your made-up language, that didn't mean anything, that was nonsense. You could have said meep boop and then said, that means something
that
in
means
Polish.
Meep boop.
His movies are very tech-heavy, a lot of action, kind of big, except for Titanic, obviously. But they're sort of these big dick-swinging movies, right? You tend to think of him as sort of a guy's director. However, what I find interesting is that he actually writes really interesting, not interesting, strong parts for women.
Yeah.
Because Zoe Saldana as Neytiri is easily the best character in Avatar, I think.
She's the most...
And probably the best performance.
But that's very interesting you say that. I am not disagreeing, but it's interesting that a best performance comes from a person, a thing on screen that's completely fake. Better than what's his name? I mean, this guy, is he a movie star?
Oh, Sam Worthington?
Yeah,
he is. Maybe you didn't see Terminator Salvation. Maybe you didn't see Clash of the Titans. He's had big parts in huge movies.
No matter how much the audience doesn't want to accept it, like, he's an effing movie star, isn't he?
Yeah, take it, America. Sam Worthington.
You love him. You know you do. Don't be a tease. We know you want him.
So I think it's interesting that the female character is the most interesting, but also, like, Sarah Connor in Terminator 2, also Ellen Ripley in Aliens. Like, he writes pretty kick-ass female parts. Just an observation. I think
Kate
it's kind of interesting.
Character.
I mean, she is the best character in Titanic.
Yeah, well, that's because Kate Winslet is awesome, and
right.
we love her.
Right.
And we would leave our respective women for her, maybe.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I don't think so either.
I caught the beginning of Titanic on, like, TBS the other night. I guess I forgot.
Very funny.
I forgot that Bill Paxton, maybe it was TNT, they know drama. I forgot
I love that,
that
they've carved his niches out for themselves.
I forgot that we're the funny ones. We're the serious ones. I forgot that Bill Paxton and the bookend sequences of that movie that take too long has, like, dyed blonde hair and an earring. And I guess because it was 1997 and that was acceptable. But, like, what? He's the renegade Titanic historian. I don't understand. He's the rock and roll
he has
Titanic
a completely
historian.
Random heart. I mean, that's he just needs to find the ship. It's a bad joke. I apologize.
Oddly enough, though, I just made that point about James Cameron being good to women in his movies. And then I remembered True Lies, which is a movie that hates women.
Yeah, it definitely
that
does.
That movie is about hating women.
You know what, though? I think it doesn't hate women nearly as much as it hates hermaphrodites.
That movie is 100% about James Cameron hating and fearing women.
Shims.
And that's a movie that I liked when I saw it more than I like now. Like, that's a movie I definitely have reassessed the other way. But I do that a lot. I see movies and don't like them, and then I'll watch
True
them
True Lies was just on TV. We were talking about this. What was, the like, some of the lines at the end when the guy's on
the
missile?
Yeah, he like, racks his balls and crosses his eyes. Like, he's a deadly terrorist about to die, and, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger is thwarting this plot. And he's crossing his eyes. James Cameron, not good with the comedy.
No, absolutely not.
And tries to work it in a little too often.
Did you hear that James Cameron's directing the new Meet the Fockers movie?
I don't hear that.
He's not, actually.
It's going to cost $600 million.
Can I, I know we're nearing the end. Yeah. Stay tuned. It's almost over.
Calendar.
Two things, two quick things.
I shouldn't spend so much time talking about 8 seconds.
Luke Perry! okay, so it takes over 5 years of cryo sleep to reach Pandora from Earth. Yeah. And I'm assuming this giant
ship. You don't dream in cryo.
No, absolutely not. You, unless you're programmed to kill people in the future.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
Simon Phoenix, enhance your calm. They taught John Spartan how to knit in cryo.
And eat Taco Bell. So this giant ship from Earth is coming to Pandora. It takes over 5 years to get there.
Yeah.
Let's just put, I'm just going to like put this out there.
Okay.
Okay. So people discover Pandora. I'm assuming like they're on Earth years and years and years ago. They discover Pandora through a telescope. They say, let's shoot something there to discover what's there, like a probe or a satellite or something. This takes years to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5 years, mm-hmm. maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's discovered. They research it. They do this, they do that. I mean, my point is this, is that this operation seems inconceivable,
right?
That it takes 5 years to get there, that they're there and they're building this Pentagon-like facility that has giant mechanized armor suits and tanks and bulldozers and plows. I mean, they can't bring all that stuff from Earth. They can't because it's huge. It's enormous. The operation is enormous. So these ships come and they bring all these people that are sleeping. And it takes, is it light speed? Again, I'm kind of nerding out right now because I love Star Trek and Star Wars and stuff, and light speed, obviously. But still, it takes, when something's 5 light years away, it takes 5 years to get there going light speed.
Right.
So if it's going light speed, it's 5 light years away, whatever. So it takes all this time to get there, to get back, to go back. I mean, we're talking like the unobtainium. It just doesn't seem, it doesn't seem to make sense to me. And I know this is a dumb complaint. I'm getting very specific in the minutia of it. I'm obviously a huge nerd, but you've got the, you know, the My Two Dads character, Giovanni Ribisi, part of the Mod Squad. He's there. He is the unobtainium.
He's been house trained.
He's a dick. Yes, yeah, don't worry. He's a dick. So I'm assuming but he looks like he's my age, 30, right. 31 years old.
Right.
And I know he's a little older in real life, but it's like, okay, so you started becoming the boss when you were like 10 in order to like go back and forth and like do all this.
Well, and the question is, because it's hinted at late in the movie that Earth is like pretty much a wasteland.
Earth has shit the bed.
They killed it. That's the tagline for Avatar.
James Cameron's Avatar.
Earth has shit the bed. that Earth is pretty much burned out. That like the humans depleted all the resources. He says like they killed their mother or something. So that raises the question, who are they selling unobtainium to?
Right. Or is it purely fun? And I would almost accept like if it wasn't so.
And for what?
And if it wasn't like this valuable thing, if they said like, listen, this is why we're here, this unobtainium, which is a horrible name, but
yes.
We're not talking about that because everyone else already has. If they said this is what is making Earth, like this is the only reason Earth is still alive or something like that, as opposed to $20 million. I'm just thinking like, what?
Well, but see that then you run into an issue of, well, they're almost noble. You know what I mean?
But that would be more interesting, wouldn't it?
I agree. But again, James Cameron has to paint in such broad strokes that it's like evil corporation, soulful,
right.
Native people, you know.
The last thing I want to talk about is bestiality.
Yeah.
And I think that it's odd because the first time Jake Sully meets Neytiri, Zoe Saldana's character, she saves his life from those dogs.
Right.
She brings him back to home tree.
Right.
They're going to train him to become whatever.
Right.
He's unplugged and they think he's dead or they think he's whatever.
Right.
When he goes back in, she's quizzing him on all the people's names. He's getting them all wrong, except Neytiri. He's got like a twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
Like he's already falling for this like
creature. Right.
And I'm thinking like, if you reverse those roles and said aliens are here on Earth in human form, you know what I'm saying? I think that as an audience, like I'm the first to accept it because obviously that James Cameron puts this movie out there. It's out there. It's made. It's like, this is the construct of the thing I'm giving you. This is the fantasy. This is the science fiction that I'm presenting to you and you accept it. And as an audience member, we accept so much, but when you really step back and kind of think about it, it just seems to me like I get it. And I'm not arguing that something like that could happen, you know, like in all the, in the movie logic, I suppose, but it just seems so odd to me that, like, as you point out too, with like that they think is a demon. It's a lot of holes.
Right.
I think anytime you make a science fiction movie, you're obviously opening up yourself to criticism.
Right, and the problem is, as soon as you start really picking it apart, you're that guy who does the
Star Wars
prequel things. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's just like...
the 7-hour Star Wars,
right,
whatever.
You start with great sort of overriding points, and then you start to pick apart tiny details, and it's like, no. That's not...
Right.
Those are not the issues.
And it's not interesting for this movie. And I'm that's why I'm making this my last
stupid
point.
And I will almost
point.
Say, I mean... I totally agree with you. And again, the movie takes a lot of shortcuts. Like the
That's a great way to put it. It takes a ton of shortcuts.
I have a problem with
you
the
just
fact
accept
that they
it.
Even decide to train him as a Navi because little seedlings are attracted to him for no reason. There's
right.
a sequence where like he's standing and all of a sudden these little guys from the tree get all around him. And Neytiri says like, oh, he must be special. But why is he special?
Right.
There's
well, that's
no
the
reason
shortcut
why
you talked about.
A human
at one
in
point,
a fake body would be special on this moon.
When she saved him also at one point, he said, why do you save me? And she says, you have a good heart. And it's just, it's so
right,
easy, you know?
But the...
Which is the same thing.
The thing
as
about
like
him falling in love with her, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make sense. But I do at least understand, I think putting him in a wheelchair was a really good idea. Because it makes sense that
I think it's
would,
a good idea for most people, actually.
It makes
too many
sense
walkers.
That he would fall for being a Navi much more quickly. Because... he can walk. It's liberating. It's, you know what I
he's
mean?
He's like a Superman there, too.
Right.
He's like, he is special.
Right.
He does have these abilities.
So
to
it makes
with
sense
things.
That he would prefer that world.
He's able to
very
ride that giant
quickly.
Bird.
He's able to ride two of those giant birds,
right.
which
one's
the first time
bigger.
I saw it, I didn't like. Because I'm like, I thought you could only bond with one ever, and I was being
well,
that guy.
Again,
but
if they're
different
two
species,
different species,
which
yeah.
I didn't realize. James Cameron, make that clearer. I know they're different colors. One is very red. I get it. I don't know, but it's a weird thing. Like I will totally watch Avatar a bunch more times in my life.
Yeah.
And I never,
so
watching
you,
it the first time I sat there thinking to myself, I will never watch this again.
Well, we have a friend, a very good friend of ours who actually has never seen it because he
just doesn't want to.
Right. And that's his whole thing. This guy, by the way, is a film buff. He's a cinephile.
Right.
He refuses to see it, which obviously totally is anathema to the whole point of being a cinephile. It's
right.
like, you want to see everything. I'll even see pieces of garbage because it's like, well, I like movies. Let's call this podcast I Like Movies.
Okay.
Not I Love Movies.
So I don't know if I fully would like F Avatar.
Yeah,
I
let's bring it back home. Bring it back
I
home.
Definitely,
F this movie, Avatar, Judgment.
I'll
what's
watch
the verdict?
A bunch more times. I will be excited if he says he's going to do a sequel, and I never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever.
You think he's going to do a sequel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he kind of
I would
has
hold
to
Avatar's hand.
Yeah.
I wouldn't F it. It's not. I'm not going to say F this movie. It shouldn't exist. I'm glad it didn't win the Oscar.
Right.
Because obviously, I think if it did, it's such a bad precedent to set. And
but it already
let's,
is.
And let's
and
be honest that like the Oscars are a joke. I mean, it's like, who cares about what
right.
wins the Oscars
right.
and stuff.
I would not have lost sleep over it. But here's
no.
the issue. Avatar already sets a bad precedent. And that's the thing people don't get. It's like, yes, it tells a bad story. And not a bad story, but it has a bad script. But again, James Cameron spent a lot of time putting it together on a technical level. However, and it was very successful, and his efforts were rewarded, I think rightly so. Even when I didn't like the movie, again,
you got tons of pussy.
It's good to see a guy who, like I said, puts it all out there, spends so much time putting a movie together. It's good to see that rewarded. However, the legacy of Avatar is the onslaught of 3D, and
yeah.
It's wrong. Hollywood, once again, learns, and this is not going to be some anti-Hollywood diatribe, but like they learn the wrong lessons, always.
Right. Always.
And the lesson that they learned was people spent a lot of money to go see a movie in 3D. Let's make
everything
in 3D,
right.
including like Clash of the Titans, a movie that was shot for 2D, which was then converted to 3D. I mean, you have to remember that James Cameron designed Avatar to be in 3D.
Right. No, it's horrible, and I think that it's. But I'm.
There's like 70 movies coming out in the next year in 3D.
I'm happy that people like. I think I heard today Francis Ford Coppola is anti-3D.
Yeah.
I heard different people, different like you know because it's a hassle like to wear these constricting glasses, especially for people that wear glasses too. It's like you're wearing two pairs of glasses to watch something,
which I've had to do
until the day comes when 3D can just be, you know, without any sort of
apparatus. Which is what people are saying, that that's when it will be the standard.
But well, and that's at fine.
That point, aren't we watching holograms? Like, I can't wrap my mind around that.
Okay. That is the Jetsons. Okay. And that's what I was saying. I think that TVs, you know, like, they're coming out with 3D TVs, I think, like LED TVs that are going to be 3D.
Right. But, which I have no interest in.
No, absolutely
3D
not.
Doesn't interest me.
3D TVs, which still require glasses to watch these things, that no media exists now for the DVD players and
stuff. And we also have no idea what that is doing to our eyesight.
Right.
There's been no research, you know. We won't know for 20, 30 years.
I'm Andy Rooney.
You know what I mean? But just like, why are so many people going blind? Oh, Avatar.
But I think James that you're going to find, instead of like, we have these flat panel TVs, and I'm sure there will be a way technology makes it like the deep depths of whatever, but there might be a thing where it's like this thing from your ceiling to your floor of just these two orbs that cast a thing in the middle.
What you're saying is it's going to be Jaws, whatever, in Back to the Future Part 2.
Yes, absolutely.
Where the thing comes out, the horrible early CGI comes out. And
Can we make a pledge for the next F This Movie to talk about Back to the Future? Because I've got some things to say.
Back to not the about, Futures 2 and 3.
Not about Back to the Future, because let's be honest, Back to the Future is, Patrick?
It's a perfect movie.
It's a perfect movie. Movie ever made. Back to the Future, that's okay. That's a movie. F, man, I want to F this movie.
Oh, my God.
Back to the Future is perfect.
My God.
Back to the Future is 2 and 3.
I would make it pregnant.
2 and 3 are not good, and I argue, a little teaser, that 3 is better than 2, and Patrick has the counterpoint.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I do, honestly.
You gotta watch
I don't
them
even
again.
Know that, I don't even know that I would, because they're very different movies.
Yeah.
Not just, obviously, in what they are dealing with, but I think in the way that they deal, in the way that they go about.
Yeah, no, they're completely different, but it's interesting to kind of like compare them, and I don't know. So anyway, James Cameron's Avatar, whatever.
I like it way more than I used to. It's a movie that I've come around on.
I feel the exact same way. I'm still at 51%.
I find myself liking it now, which I never would have guessed. For a little while, when I first...
It's funny if you heard that, by the way, just said like, I like it a lot more now, and then listen to the previous hour of just us ripping apart
Really. When I first watched it again, I was like, oh, this is watchable. I can see myself wanting to put this on like once a year. My theory was that Avatar was the new Waterworld, which was a movie I'm not crazy about, but like once a year or so, I'm like, I gotta watch Waterworld. I don't know why.
Just so you know,
you can draw other comparisons.
Patrick is crazy about movies.
It was very expensive.
You're a movie junkie.
People drink their own pee. I am a movie junkie, and my favorite movie of the 90s is The Net. But then I watched it again, and then I saw it in the theater again, and I'm like, no, I actually think I actually like Avatar now.
Yeah.
It's more than just the new Waterworld to me, I guess, is my point.
Well, there you have it, audience. I'm all whatever, and Patrick says, Avatar is more than just the new Waterworld.
Thank you very much for listening. Please email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Tell us a movie that you came around on or that you started to hate more. Tell us a movie you want to hear F'd.
Yes, that's a great idea. Let us know if we should watch something specifically because it's a polarizing. Well, it doesn't have to be polarizing, but it would help.
Yeah, kind of. If it's Back to the Future, it's going to be an hour of just like, holy shit.
Well, Back to the Future is so great. Well, yeah, don't put out there. I mean, I think I even proposed like Boogie Nights. What are you going to say about Boogie Nights? It's a great movie.
I love Boogie Nights.
It's a perfect movie.
Yeah. This part's awesome. Oh, and this part's awesome.
Remember that part that's awesome?
Heather
Graham that
is
awesome.
So hot in that movie.
Mark Wahlberg's dick is so big.
So there's not a lot to say about Boogie Nights other than, holy shit, that movie's awesome.
So send us your suggestions.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for the next podcast. I probably won't be around for that one, so you'll have to sit through insufferable boredom, I'm sure. So anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for having me, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. And remember, everyone, I see you.